Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. And now, listeners, we're going to talk about space.
Space, the final frontier.
The final frontier is becoming less and less of an unexplored mystery. Last month, NASA's Perseverance rover touched down on Mars and is already sending down stunning pictures. And for the first time, audio from the Red Planet. Here's the sound of Perseverance persevering, driving around the Martian landscape. And while it's exciting to hear sounds and see photos from another world, we also have to think about that word, frontier. Once upon a time, the expansion into the frontier was framed as a romantic notion, but we now know the real history of violence and oppression of occupying land. So as we, Earthlings, push out beyond our home planet, how can we be sure that colonialism and the injustices that accompany this exploration aren't among our first extraterrestrial exports? Dr. Alice Gorman, a.k.a. Dr. Space Junk, joins us now from Adelaide, Australia. She's an archaeologist who looks at satellites, space debris, and probe landing sites the way other archaeologists look at arrowheads and clay pots and cave paintings. Dr. Gorman, first of all, it's 3 o'clock in the morning where you are. Thank you so much for waking up and being with us.
That is my pleasure. I do feel quite alert at this point in time.
Also with us is Professor Chris Schaberg, English professor at Loyola, focusing on environmental humanities. He recently wrote an article in Slate called "We're Already Colonizing Mars." Professor Schaberg, thanks for being with us as well.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Gorman, before you were Dr. Space Junk, your job was to help preserve Aboriginal heritage sites in Australia. What ideas have you carried over from that work into your work on what you call humanity's space heritage?
It was a really interesting transition from that background to working in space. And I guess some of the ideas I brought with me were classic ones in kind of archaeology, like the stories of those who don't make it into written histories. When I'm looking at space material culture and sites, I'm also asking who's not there, who's not represented by this, or are they represented in ways that aren't kind of obvious? You know, when we think of those grand narratives about the space race and everything. So where are Indigenous people? Where are women? Where are other kinds of groups? So I guess that's very much informed how I've started to look at places like Martian landing sites and space junk in Earth orbit and all that kind of stuff. And the other thing, I guess, is I've brought my practice from terrestrial heritage, just thinking about practical issues, you know, like what kind of legislation might we need? Can we assess cultural significance in the same way, as it turns out we can? So it has been extremely useful in approaching the record of space heritage.
Professor Schaberg, our listeners might be thinking, an English professor on a conversation about space? Help them out. How does your work intersect with space exploration?
Yeah, thanks. Well, it actually sort of builds off of what Professor Gorman was saying. I was struck by the naming of the most recent landing site on Mars as the Octavia E. Butler landing site, which is an author, an African-American author, and sort of founder of Afrofuturism. And on the one hand, this is exciting. This is like a real honor for this author to be, you know, for her name to be used here. But on the other hand, as a literature professor, I'm thinking, wait a minute, has everyone read these stories? Because these are not simple stories about space exploration or colonizing other planets. These are very complex, ambiguous stories that are ethically and morally fraught. And so that got me thinking about the narratives that we're telling as we undergo these most recent ventures.
Yeah, Professor Schaberg, you've talked about the personalities driving this push for space exploration. You call Elon Musk the most egregious example of the extraterrestrial colonizing mindset. You know, until recently, though, it's been governments, not billionaires, coordinating the agenda for space. So how does the conversation about responsible, sustainable exploration change when we're talking about rich individuals versus government-run agencies?
Yeah, something I've been paying attention to lately is how the justifications for space exploration seem to have this sort of internal contradiction where you either hear people say, well, it's natural for the human, you know, for the human instinct to just explore and discover, or it's our destiny even, it's what we're supposed to do. But then on the other hand, you hear something like a more tactical justification, and this is one that Elon Musk will use from time to time, like, well, we need to do this because otherwise the human species is going to go extinct. And so I've been thinking about how these two rationales don't really sit well together, because if it's just something we can't help but doing, then we just have to talk about how we're going to colonize other planets and explore space. But if it's something that we think we should do, then it's also possible that we don't have to do it. And so that's a different conversation that happens there. And so it's one that I think it's a subtlety that often gets lost when we're enamored with someone with a very high visibility, strong personality who just can kind of conflate those two different rationales.
Dr. Gorman, before we start talking about Mars, I do want to ask you about the news that broke over the weekend in the world of space junk, because you were Dr. Space Junk. This rocket fell back down to Earth over the weekend after dropping off a component for China's space station, and you wrote about it for CNN as sort of a cautionary tale. What happened and what stood out to you about this event?
Well, it was one of the biggest uncontrolled entries we've had for some time, which always generates a lot of interest in the public and media. But I was thinking about this because, in general, it's good that things re-enter the atmosphere and burn up. Like, that's what the entire space community looks to as the solution for how much space junk we've got up there. And as I was thinking about this, I was remembering there had been a very few studies which showed that rocket exhaust from launches actually put soot and alumina particles into the stratosphere, which had an effect on the ozone layer. So I was thinking about the Long March re-entry as one of, you know, a multitude of events which actually can put the ozone layer possibly back in danger. We've been there before, of course. So thinking about how we kind of have to stop thinking of things like this as isolated events and more as part of a whole pattern, which I guess comes back to kind of to the topic of our conversation, really, which is how we're just accustomed to thinking of the environment as a resource to exploit, just as we are now thinking of other worlds as resources to exploit. And we really need to think differently about this.
That was actually my next question I was going to bring to Professor Schaeberg. You know, when we think about colonialism, it goes hand in hand with the idea of people going to a place they weren't invited, building things for themselves, using resources that didn't really belong to them. When you think about debris, space garbage, space junk, how does this fit into this idea of colonizing space?
It goes back to that word that Professor Gorman used of it's a pattern. So when we think about going to Mars and leaving junk, or going to Mars and taking selfies or recording the sounds, these are patterns that get instilled, and they make it, I think, more palatable and more just more easy to accept that, well, like, obviously we can do this, we should do this, it's what we're familiar with back here on Earth. So I think it's about recognizing that these aren't just one-off or, you know, I've heard people say, well, it's just a big dead rock. Like, what's the problem if you just leave a parachute lying around? Well, it's not just one thing, but it becomes a pattern. And it's a pattern that, as we know on Earth, can have disastrous effects that can increase exponentially.
My guests are Professor Chris Schaeberg and Dr. Alice Gorman. Let's talk about Mars. Dr. Gorman, last month the Perseverance rover touched down on the red planet along with its helicopter called Ingenuity. Perseverance is the sixth rover currently on the planet. I think 10 tons of human-made objects currently on the surface, if my research is correct. Dr. Gorman, you've written about protecting the human heritage of the moon. What does our human heritage on Mars look like?
I guess this is a difference between how we define things. So for me, as Professor Schaeberg said, that we've sent all this junk to Mars. But junk is what's important to archaeologists. We basically look at what humans leave behind. We look at all that garbage and trash as clues to how past people thought and created their societies and worlds. And I suppose all the stuff we've left on Mars is a similar record that tells us how we think about this place and how we create this place. And I think something Professor Schaberg just said is absolutely critical here as well. There is a narrative around places without life or without water as dead. They're dead worlds. And I think this is absolutely critically tied to how people justify using their resources. And I guess Mars is interesting because it kind of doesn't have, unlike the Moon, it doesn't have any resources as such that we can use in terrestrial economies. So that also makes, you know, Musk and others' sort of ideas of how necessary Mars is kind of interesting. But, you know, yeah, as you say, we've got all this material there now. We've got landers and rovers and orbiters that are currently active around the planet. I look on it as, and they're all robots, you know. This is the planet of robots. And it's likely to stay so in the near future. It's not going to be an easy place for humans to live at all. On the Moon, we do have those traces, footprints and biological remains from when humans actually went there. And I think Mars is, it's covered in these robots. Well, it's not covered. There's all these robots which have evolved to be better suited to the environment. So I think through this material, we can see the evolution of our knowledge and conceptions about what Mars is and how we might adapt to it in future. And to pick up again on something Professor Schoberg said, we're culturally terraforming Mars with these objects which reflect our ideas. So we, you know, we haven't had to change its environment yet, but we're already in our minds transforming it into this place, which is becoming, we're becoming more intimate with. We can listen to it now. And we, since Mariner 2, we've had the colours and the landscapes in our minds. And I think this is part of, yeah, what kind of comes it becomes close to us, so we can justify it as something that's within our kind of, I don't even know what to call it. It's on, it's becoming on the close side of the frontier, not the far side of the frontier.
I love when you two are building on each other's work. I don't have to ask as a conduit. It's fantastic. Professor Schaber, I want to follow up on your article, We're Already Colonizing Mars. And this also follows on something Dr. Gorman just said. In the article, you take this sort of deeper look into the idea that while there are no people there, you see this colonizer mindset in the ways that space exploration is communicated, in the way we take photos. What do you mean to colonize with the eyes?
Well, I guess I was thinking about some of the early landscape photography, especially of the American West, but certainly it was taking place in many parts of the Earth. But just the ways that certain horizons are framed, the ways that certain topographies are captured, this is a way of, as you mentioned earlier, romanticizing the landscape. And but in so doing, it's not an objective way of seeing it. It's a way of you know, precipitating a narrative about it, something we can do, inviting us in to explore, to climb. And this goes all the way back then to Elon Musk saying, like, well, there's, you know, there's not as much gravity, so we can jump high. We can, you know, we can be sort of athletic on Mars. That's one of his selling points. And it's weirdly accommodated by these images that we see that do make it seem, you know, not so different from Scottsdale, Arizona. I mean, of course, we know it is, but I'm just saying that the images right. sort of give it this sheen of a landscape beckoning for us to wander through it with the right, you know, equipment.
Dr. Gorman, what are two or three questions do you think that people who are involved in space exploration should be asking themselves at this moment?
Oh, gosh, that's an interesting one. Well, one of them is, like, do we need to do this? Mm-hmm. I think we do need to do. We need to know more about the solar system, because we're supposedly in this era called the Anthropocene, where human activities are creating this new geological layer that's due to all of the ways we've changed the environment. So we need to know more about the solar system so that we can contextualize ourselves. Mm. We can know where we fit into, again, coming back to the patterns. So we don't know enough about these patterns.
I have to dive in here. We're going to have a heart out in a minute, and I don't want to end the segment without thanking you both. I've been talking to Dr. Alice Gorman, a.k.a. Dr. Space Junk, and Loyola English professor Chris Schaeberg. His article is called We're Already Colonizing Mars. Huge thanks to both of you for joining us on the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for having us.
And that's all of it for today. I'm Allison Stewart. I appreciate your listening, and I appreciate you. Please meet me back here next time.